similarly, you can easily adulterate the text of the Gita by adding something to it. Usually this is how they do it. They present an edition and they publish an introduction. The introduction in the modern world is generally quite substantial. It runs for some 40-50 pages, it will run. And they will, generally the scholars try to present it, the introduction, as giving the essential point that has to be got by reading the Bhagavad Gita. It is not that they accept the Bhagavad Gita as truth. Traditional scholars in India, they accept the Bhagavad Gita as truth, even if they are Advaitins, if they are Mayavadins. But academic scholars in India and outside India, they generally don't accept it as being true. So what happens is, I look at this book in a bookstore, and I've been told that this book is probably going to make me understand life. So I buy this book. But then I'm listening to some scholar saying some things. So that is adulterating my reading. He could have written whatever he wanted to write separately. My opinion regarding Bhagavad Gita. Or often, you'll see that they present commentary on the Gita, giving their own ideas as if that is Krishna's idea. So this is called Aropana in Sanskrit, superimposition. They superimpose a certain idea on the Bhagavad Gita and claim that that is what Krishna is saying. So Prabhupada is saying that if personally I have any credit in this matter, it is only that I have tried to present Bhagavad Gita as it is, without any adulteration. Before my presentation of Bhagavad Gita as it is, almost all the English editions of Bhagavad Gita were introduced to fulfill someone's personal ambition. Personal ambition means that I have a certain concept. This is very, very common in India, where you have thousands of people who like Bhagavad Gita, and they are using the text of the Gita to basically trumpet their own ideas. It's like in India, Gandhi, he used the Bhagavad Gita to promote nationalism and to promote the Swaraj movement. So they do all kinds of gymnastics using the text of the Gita. So they are done because they have certain preconception and they want to use the Bhagavad Gita to justify that conception. They are not just neutrally analyzing what Krishna wants to say. Now, Krishna actually has something to say in the Gita, and it is not very difficult to understand. If you look at the text of the Gita, there are two places where Krishna says that I'll tell you the essence of all scriptures. For instance, if you open chapter 15, and you see, look at text 15. Chapter 15, text 15. Sarvasya chaham hriti sannishto mattasmitir jnanamapohanam cha vedeshya sarvai rahameva vidyo vedantikrit vedeva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. The point to note is, by all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. Krishna is the compiler of Vedanta. Krishna is the knower of the Vedas. And then, look at the next text. Dvavimav purushau loke, kshara-shakshara eva cha, kshara-sarvani bhutani, kutasthokshara loke. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. Uttama purusha stvanya paramatmetyudahrita yolokatrayamavishu vivartyavya ishvara. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. Okay, so what is Krishna saying so far? He's saying, the first point he said is, through all the Vedas have to be known. That means, Krishna is the subject matter of all levels of Vedic tradition. And now he's going to substantiate it with the series of verses.
He's saying that there are fallible living entities. And there are infallible living entities. Fallible entities. Higher than them, there are infallible entities. And he's saying that he is higher than both of them. Clear monotheism. This is not monism. Krishna is not saying, I am the fallible entity. I am the infallible entity. Okay.
So text 17 says, besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. There are important points here. He is the greatest living personality. He is the Supreme Soul. He is imperishable. He is the Lord himself. He has entered the three worlds. He is maintaining the three worlds. Okay. So he is different from the world. He is different from the living beings. He is actually different. He is their master. Text 18. Yasmak sharamatito hum aksharadabhichottamaha atosmi loke vedecha prathita purushottamaha. Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible. And because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. So Krishna is that Supreme Person.
When you talk about Krishna, the Supreme Person. There is only one Supreme Person. He is higher than the infallible entity, higher than the fallible entity.
Now you may say, there are so many statements Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita. So many things he is saying. So here also he is saying something. But we'll see that there is a categorical difference between what he is saying here and what he has said elsewhere. 19. Yomam evam asam mudho janati purushottamam sa sarvavit bhajati vam sarvabhavena bharata. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of God, without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata. The point is, one who understands this point, that he is the Supreme, Krishna says he knows everything. So categorically, this is higher than everything else he has spoken. And text 20 makes it very clear. Iti guhyatamam shastram idamuktam mayanagha etat buddhva buddhiman syat kritakrityascha Bharata. This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, or sinless one. And it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection. So here you see, Krishna is saying, this is the most confidential part of Vedic scriptures. So we can clearly see that he is giving gradation of various levels of knowledge, and this is the highest knowledge. The highest understanding is, There are fallible living entities, there are infallible living entities, and there is the Supreme Person on top of them, and Krishna is that Supreme Person. This is the highest understanding. This is the most confidential teaching of Bhagavad Gita. And again he will talk like this, something similar to this. If you look at the end of the 18th chapter, if you turn to the 18th chapter, let's move a little bit earlier. Text 45 down. I will not read the Sanskrit unless required. 18.45. By following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Now, please hear from me how this can be done. 46. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings, and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. Okay? So this is one level of instruction. That we engage in our prescribed activity, even according to scripture, and we attain spiritual perfection just by that. It is 47. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. 48. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature. O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. 49. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. 50. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting in the way I shall now summarize. 51, 52, 53. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind and power of speech, who is always in trance and who is detached, free from false ego, false friends, false pride, lust, anger and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. 54. One who is thus transcendently situated at once realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. 55. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Okay. So, from the practice up to perfection is outlined one process. So this is one. This is one level of practice. Okay, I will say this. And you will see later on. This is third class. It's not that this. This is the third class. Krishna will then talk about something higher. The second class practice, by which you can attain perfection. Then he'll talk about first class practice, by which you can attain perfection.
This is not practice, which is called true perfection.
Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee, under my protection, reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. O scion of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. This is another. All of these verses which I read out now, it's another level of practice, one level higher.
This is also another level of practice,
in which he is saying that you fully take shelter of the super soul. And even if you are engaged in material activities, it doesn't matter.
In the third level of practice, the third class practice, you are primarily engaged in your material activities, but you are doing it with a spiritual motive. So gradually you will come to the point. That was the first series that Krishna dealt with. Then the second series is you completely surrender to the super soul and take full shelter of of the super soul, even while engaged in material activities. That means you give more attention to spiritual life than to material life. So that is second class.
Text 63. Thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. So I want to draw your attention to this point. I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Iti te jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram maya vimrishyaita rasheshena yathechasi tatha guru. So the idea is, he's saying this is more confidential knowledge. That means he just finished talking about the second level and he said this is more confidential knowledge. That means what he presented before is confidential. This is confidential, that is more confidential. Why is this confidential? Because most people who follow Vedic culture, who participate in Vedic culture, don't even understand this point. They don't even understand that you have to attain liberation, you have to attain the kingdom of God. So they only know how to use the Vedas for sense enjoyment. So for them it is confidential. So if this is confidential, it is more confidential. Then you see, continue talking now. Sarva guhyatamam bhuya shrune paramam vacha ishto sime dhramiti tato vakhyami te hitam. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. So now he is giving a higher level of instruction. This is the supreme instruction, most confidential. And this is first class. Here also he will talk about practice, which will lead to perfection.
मन्मनाभव मद्भक्तो मद्याजी माम नमस्कुरु मामे वैश्यति सत्यं ते प्रतिजाने प्रियोसि मे. ऑलवेज थिंक ऑफ मी, बिकम माय डिवोटी, वर्शिप मी एंड ऑफर योर होमेज टू मी. दस यू विल कम टू मी विदाउट फेल. परफेक्शन. दस यू विल कम टू मी विदाउट फेल. आई प्रॉमिस यू दिस बिकॉज यू आर माय वेरी डियर फ्रेंड. 66. सर्वधर्मान् परित्यज्य मामेकं शरणं व्रज अहम त्वाम सर्व पापेभ्यो मोक्षयिष्यामि मासिच. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. If here one gives up every activity other than devotional service to Krishna, this is the most confidential information. Okay. And then he says, 67, this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. 68. Ya idam paramam guhyam mad bhakte svabhidasyati bhakti mahi param kritva mame vaishyat yashamshaya. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. So again, notice that he is referring to the last series as the supreme secret. Paramam Guhyam, the supreme secret. So anyone who goes through the Gita will, a little bit carefully, will understand that even though Krishna is saying so many things, he makes certain points very, very clear. For instance, that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. There is only one supreme personality of Godhead. That is Vishnu or Krishna, and Krishna identifies himself as that, as we saw at the end of chapter 15. So as far as tattva or knowledge of reality goes, the highest knowledge is, the highest understanding, the highest philosophical understanding is, there is Krishna or Vishnu who is the Supreme Personality of God. There are infallible living entities, the liberated living entities, and below them there are the conditioned living entities. This is the highest understanding. That is not a point of confusion in the Gita. It is not a point of confusion. But how many academic scholars get this point? How many translators, after reading how many editions of English Bhagavad Gita you can get in the marketplace, like fish in an ocean? You know, how many of you get this point that there are conditioned souls, there are liberated souls, and there is Krishna on top?
How many of us get this point? Krishna himself is saying this is the most confidential, highest understanding. But people don't present it as the highest understanding. Whereas in this edition, Prabhupada will repeatedly remind us of this. Similarly, when it comes to activities, which activity should be done, very clearly Krishna is saying, the most confidential information is you do stop everything else other than bhakti yoga. That's the highest. That is Krishna's own opinion. But how many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita will speak like that? They don't speak like that. So when you don't speak like that, that's called adulteration. That is the problem. So that's the problem you get from Advaitavadins. That's the problem you get from different missions, different gurus, different altars, different yogis, you name it. Basically, they don't repeat the highest teachings of Bhagavad Gita. The highest teaching of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna is the supreme being, non-different from Vishnu, who is different from and superior to all the living entities. The living entities, they transmigrate through reincarnation. Krishna does not. Krishna has his own kingdom in the spiritual world called Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, of course, he receives information. Krishna has his own planet, Krishna Loka. And the living entities are meant to be there. If you are not there, you are suffering here. How many people bring up these points? They don't bring up these points. That is called adulteration. So that is what Prabhupada is referring to in the preface as Krishna's will. We have, like he says, our attempt in presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is to present the mission of the Supreme Personality of God is Krishna. Our business is to present the will of Krishna, not that of any mundane speculator like the politician, philosopher or scientist, for they have very little knowledge of Krishna despite all their other knowledge. So even if they may be great scholars, and you know they are very, very thorough in Sanskrit, but they forget these very simple points. This is a very simple point that Krishna is the one supreme God. There is only one supreme God, Krishna. And all the other Vedic deities, they are all his servants. How many people bring out this point? But that is Bhagavad Gita's opinion. That is the opinion of Krishna. Similarly, the greatest activity that Krishna is recommending us to do is to think about him, serve him, remember him, worship him, offer obeisance to him. How many people bring out these points? So because they are not promoting what Krishna himself is trying to promote, therefore they are missing the point. Intentionally or unintentionally. Some people may be intentionally doing it. But most people are doing it unintentionally. So most of the commentators on Bhagavad Gita, they are unintentionally missing out on the point. So they don't even understand Krishna's will, even though he makes it so clear. When Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madhvakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, etc. We, unlike the so-called scholars, do not say that Krishna and his inner spirit are different. Krishna is absolute. And there is no difference between Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's pastimes, etc. This absolute position of Krishna is difficult to understand for any person who is not a devotee of Krishna in the system of parampara, disciplic succession. Again, these are all points that Krishna himself makes in the Gita. Krishna himself says that Bhaktiya Mam Abhijanati, you can only understand my position if you take to bhakti. If you don't engage in bhakti yoga, you cannot understand me. He says that. Similarly, in the Upanishad, there are statements Yasya Deve, Parabhakti, Yatha Deve, Tatha Guru, Tasya Ite, Kadita Hyartha, Prakashante, Mahatmanaha. Only for one who has pure devotion to Krishna and the Guru, only for that person, the knowledge, the understanding, the correct understanding will be revealed in the heart. The others cannot understand it. So, it is not a matter of just reading a book. You can read the book and still not understand it. You can read the book but still not understand it. If you don't have the service attitude, Krishna will not allow you to understand it. So this is a special problem for one who is not a devotee of Krishna in the system of parampara, disciplic succession.
generally the so-called scholars, politicians, philosophers and swamis, without perfect knowledge of Krishna, try to banish or kill Krishna when writing commentary on Bhagavad Gita. It's a common problem. You may read the whole Bhagavad Gita and the commentator will not let you come to the point that you should become a devotee of Krishna. So even though Krishna is saying you should become a devotee of Krishna, practically in every chapter Krishna is arresting our attention on him. Like from in the second chapter, Krishna will make a point that sense control happens when you think of me. In the third chapter he will say that if you perform all your prescribed duties for my pleasure. In the fourth chapter he will say that my pastimes and my activities are divine. If you simply understand that they are divine, you will get free from this bondage to the material world and you'll come back to me. In the fifth chapter also he will talk about how important it is to know about him. In the sixth chapter he will talk about Ashtanga Yoga and he will say you should meditate on me. How many Ashtanga Yogis meditate on Vishnu? How many people do that? How many editions of Bhagavad Gita make the reader understand this point? They don't understand this point. Similarly, of course, from chapter 7 onwards, it's very obvious. Chapter 7, Krishna repeatedly talks about himself. Chapter 8, he says, if you remember me at the time of death, then you will come back to me. Then chapter 9 is fully talking about the importance of becoming a devotee, the special privileges of devotees, etc. Then chapter 10 he talks about how he is the origin of everything, etc. Then chapter 11 he shows his universal form, Vishwarup, and then he says the Vishwarup basically he makes the point that the Vishwarup is coming from him. Chapter 12 he talks about how it's more important to meditate on him than to meditate on the impersonal Brahman. And meditation on Krishna is higher than meditation on impersonal Brahman, easier than meditation on impersonal Brahman. And those who are devotees of Krishna, they have certain qualities. They have certain good qualities. They spontaneously come. Then chapter 13 onwards, we again starts analyzing how the material world functions, how the living entities are suffering in this world, and how when you take the devotion service to Krishna, you get out of this place. Chapter 14, he tells you that he describes the three modes of material nature, how material nature is always attracting or repelling us, they are having an effect on our minds, and if you want to get out of these, then you should completely be absorbed in devotion service to Krishna. Chapter 15, I told you, he brought out these points that he is the supreme, these points that I put out. Chapter 16, he says that there are two categories of living beings, those who like to carry out the instruction of the Vedas and those who don't. Those who don't carry out his instructions are demoniac and they are averse to Krishna, him. Again, he talks about him. In chapter 17, he talks about the different types of faith and how everyone should perform their material activities with faith in him, in Krishna, him. Chapter 18, again he talks about the importance of engaging in various levels of spiritual practice where you have to think about him, but it is most intense in the first class practice. Always he is talking about him. He is repeatedly talking about himself. And he makes it clear that you have to think about me, become my devotee. Repeatedly he talks about this. And he says this is the highest instruction. But when you read a commentary, when you go to the market, go to some Indology bookstore in any country of the world, and you see, you will not come across this point. You'll ensure that you don't get this point. So even though Krishna is repeatedly saying something, the commentators are coming up and distracting you away from that. So because of this, Prabhupada is saying that these are unauthorized commentators. So that's why he's saying they're trying to banish Krishna. They are trying to take you away from Krishna. It is like somebody who claims to belong to the Hare Krishna movement and is basically trying to convince you that you don't have to chant Hare Krishna. How can he claim to be representing the Hare Krishna movement? He can present himself as belonging to some other movement. Some other movement, that's fine. Some movement which doesn't chant Hare Krishna. But how can he claim to be representing a movement which is dedicated itself for that? Similarly, Krishna in this book, he dedicated himself to explaining the importance of surrendering to him, becoming his devotee, being focused on him. So Prabhupada very often got angry when people used the text of the Gita to make their own point. So he would simply say, why can't they just write their own book, make their own, let them create their own philosophy. Why did they use Krishna? They know that Bhagavad Gita is popular. They know people will read Bhagavad Gita. So why they have to write a commentary and inject their own point using the text of the Gita? Like Prabhupada once, he told the story of one of these Baba in the Himalayas. Some of these people, you know, they smoke ganja. So there was one, there were some people who were smoking ganja, but the police were coming to arrest them because it was unauthorized. And then there was one man, he very much wanted to smoke ganja. What he did was he told his friend, can you please do me a favor? I want to smoke ganja, but I don't want to be caught by the police. He said, the friend said, what should I do? How can I help you? So then he said, you hold the ganja in your hand and you put it in my mouth so that I smoke it. After every talk, you take it away. So then he was doing that. Then suddenly they hear the knock and the police came. The police came and this person, his friend just went away. Then the police came and smelled his hand to see if there are any symptoms of ganja. Then he was. So Prabhupada said, all these scholars who are using Bhagavad Gita text to make their own philosophy, they are like that ganja smoker. Using Krishna's hand to smoke their ganja. They should not do this. This is not proper. They should not do this. They want to do, let them do, that's all. You make your own book. There are hundreds and thousands of people writing books on how you should live your life or what you should think about life. So you make your own book. But you know that Bhagavad Gita is most popular. So you're using the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, if you go to any city where they sell religious books or books on Indian philosophy, you see how many editions of Bhagavad Gita have come up. Within the last 15 years itself, at least 100 editions have come. God speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita for executives. Stress management from Bhagavad Gita. The contemporary edition of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita for laymen. Bhagavad Gita for non-scholars. Every year, you'll find at least 2 or 3 editions of Bhagavad Gita. Something will keep coming up. The essence of Bhagavad Gita, the heart of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it was. You know, so many things have come out. So many things have come out. And some people will do special studies on Bhagavad Gita also. They'll focus on certain topics on Bhagavad Gita. But ultimately, they want to make sure you don't become a Hare Krishna, you don't become a Vaishnava. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to banish Krishna. They're basically saying that, okay, you go away. They want Bhagavad Gita without Bhagavad. They want a Bhagavad Gita which is actually a Gita alone. So this is what he's saying. Generally, the so-called scholars, politicians, philosophers and swamis, without perfect knowledge of Krishna, try to banish or kill Krishna when writing commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Such unauthorized commentary upon Bhagavad Gita is known as Mayavad Bhashya. And Lord Chaitanya has warned us about these unauthorized men. Lord Chaitanya clearly says that anyone who tries to understand Bhagavad Gita from the Mayavadi point of view will commit a great blunder. The result of such a blunder will be that the misguided student of Bhagavad Gita will certainly be bewildered on the path of spiritual guidance and will not be able to go back to home, back to Godhead. So just like sometimes in the newspaper, a government will put a notice saying, this is for public welfare. Please ensure that the water in your taps are free from arsenic. This is how you test it. And they'll give a whole thing. So suppose some other man comes to you and he says that, have you read that? I'll tell you what it actually means. And he starts saying something else. And he distracts you away from the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to ensure you have pure water that your children can drink. But it distracts you into something. No, but actually, even though they said it, you should go to the septic tank and put this medicine and you should do this, you should do that. And if you say, no, but the government notice speaks like this. No, but you don't know. I'm coming from the government. I know what it actually means. You don't start thinking too much. I'm also a scientist. You know, I've done so much of research. And basically, the purpose will be lost. The purpose for which the notice was put will be lost. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita is a kind of government notice. It is Krishna's notice. It is basically showing that all you need to do is to serve me through the disciplic succession by serving a Vaishnava Guru. And then you will be able to come back to me. But what all these other people, they come up and say is, when Krishna says me, it is not the form Krishna. Krishna is the symbol for the infinite absolute, the impersonal absolute, the divine within him and you and everyone else. When he says me, he means the real me, the inner me, not the outer me. The outer me is the form of Krishna. So you don't get stuck with the external form of Krishna, the real me, inner me. They write all these things, they actually say all these things. Krishna, the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, he is a conduit. You know what's a conduit? Conduit is like a wire when it's connected to that. A wire conducts electricity. So the wire is a conduit. It conducts electricity through it. So you may use that wire to connect your computer, let's say. But in reality, you're not connecting to this wire, you're connecting to the power source. So, these people, their concept of Krishna, everything that Krishna talks about himself, should be surrendered to me, should perform your prescribed duty for my sake, and so on and so on and so on. It is not Krishna. It is the impersonal within Krishna. It is the impersonal within Krishna. And they think Krishna is conducting that. It's not really Krishna. So therefore, from their perspective, Krishna is a symbol. And the whole Bhagavad Gita becomes symbolic. So they take it like some kind of symbol. Some of them are very charitable. They say that, no, Krishna actually existed. There was a real Krishna. These are very liberal scholars. They're willing to believe that Krishna existed. But he was a village chief in North India. And the Indians, they're very creative writers. So they concocted a whole big story and drama and made it in the form of the Mahabharata. Because there was a small some village fight between two groups. One was the Pandava group, one was the Kaurava group. But then they exaggerated it and made it into some big thing. Then they added nice colors in the form of Devata, this, that, and all that. And then at one point they decided to make Krishna into God. So they made Krishna into God. So they, you know, they have all these kind of concepts that at best Krishna is a symbol. Well, he might have been a historical person, but are you one of those Hindus who believe in all these strange things? That God is blue? So they think that Krishna is not so relevant. So what is happening is, because of this blunder, they miss the benefit that comes out of Bhagavad Gita. They miss it. They thoroughly miss it. And Prabhupada says our only purpose is to present this Bhagavad Gita as it is in order to guide the conditioned student to the same purpose for which Krishna descends to this planet once in a day of Brahma or every 8,600,000,000 years. This purpose is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Why Krishna appears is also stated in Bhagavad Gita. And we have to accept it as it is. Otherwise, there is no point in trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita and its speaker, Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna first spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god some hundreds of millions of years ago. We have to accept this fact and thus understand the historical significance of Bhagavad Gita without misinterpretation, on the authority of Krishna. To interpret Bhagavad Gita without any reference to the will of Krishna is the greatest offense. To interpret Bhagavad Gita without any reference to the will of Krishna is the greatest offense. In order to save oneself from this offense, one has to understand the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he was directly understood by Arjuna, Lord Krishna's first disciple. Such understanding of Bhagavad Gita is really profitable and authorized for the welfare of human society in fulfilling the mission of life. See, this is a very, very important point, and we will analyze this. You will see this. You will actually see what is happening. What Prabhupada is presenting in Bhagavad Gita as it is an amplification of Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. We understand the Bhagavad Gita exactly the way Arjuna understood it. See, you have a teacher who is speaking to a student. The teacher is speaking something to the student. And because it is not just a monologue, it's not just that the teacher is giving a lecture and then he is going away. The teacher is speaking, the student is asking questions, teacher is answering. And finally the teacher is asking, so have you understood? Have you understood? And the student is saying, yes, I've understood. And he says something. He says something that I've understood. So the teacher is convinced that the student has understood. See, we are also given access to the same transcript of that talk, of that conversation. But we understand something totally different from that student. Now that student has been declared to be authentic by the teacher. So if our understanding is not parallel to the student's understanding, then we know our understanding is wrong. So this is how we test. Now if you look at Bhagavad Gita, let's have a look at Arjuna's understanding. Chapter 18, towards the very end. This is text 72. Chapter 18, text 72. Kachidetat shrutam partha tvayaika grena chetasa kachidajnana sammoha prashtaste dhananjaya. O son of Vrita, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? See, this is why Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. First of all, he is expecting that you have heard it with an attentive mind. And he is expecting that Arjuna's ignorance and illusions are dispelled. Now of course Krishna has the whole world in mind also. Arjuna is just a pretext. So he is expecting that if you study the Bhagavad Gita properly, if you listen to him properly, our ignorance and illusion will also be dispelled. And then Arjuna uvacha. Nashto moha smritir labdha patrasadan mayachuta sitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanam tava. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. So you see, here Arjuna summarizes the whole, his understanding. What has he understood? Nashto moha. My illusions have gone. Smritir labdha. My memory that I should do what you say has come back. Kvatrasada. This has happened by your mercy. It is not automatically it came. It's by your mercy. It's by your mercy. He doesn't say by your talk. It's by your mercy. Because if Krishna doesn't give you mercy, even if Krishna is speaking to you, you will not understand. So by your mercy. Sthitasmi. Now I am well fixed. Gata sandeha. I have no more any doubt. Karishye vachanam tava. I will do what you say. I will do what you say. This is the whole point. This is the whole point. After this, Krishna doesn't preach. Doesn't have anything to say. So we understand Maunam Sammati Lakshanam. Krishna has accepted this. Krishna accepts that Arjuna's understanding is correct. This is what Krishna means by saying, has your ignorance and illusion gone away? Because if your ignorance and illusion goes away, you will also say the same thing. Karishya Vachanam. Okay, Krishna, I'll do whatever you say. When we don't say that, Krishna, I will do whatever you say, that means we are still in ignorance and illusion. So this is Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. And also earlier, if you look at the 10th chapter, there also we see. Chapter 10, text 12. Arjuna Vacha. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam Ajam Vipham, Ahastvam, Rishayas Sarve, Devarshir Naradas Patha, Asito Devalo Vyasa, Swayam Chaiva Bravishime. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages, such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa, confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. See, this is Arjuna's understanding. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Krishna is the ultimate abode. Krishna is the purest. Krishna is the absolute truth. Krishna is eternal. Krishna is transcendental. Krishna is the original person. Krishna is unborn. Krishna is the greatest. And on top of it, you see, he's talking about certain sages. This is not just my understanding. This is the understanding of Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa. The important point to note is, you may say that there are so many Hindus, everyone accepts Krishna as great, but Krishna is great, others are great because they are all one. And Arjuna is not a Hindu. Arjuna is not that type of person, because he is quoting these personalities, Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyasa. Now Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyasa, they are all Vaishnavas. It is very well known that they are Vaishnavas. Like, they all believe in Vishnu Sarvottama, that Vishnu is the Supreme Being. The other Vedic deities are not equal to Vishnu. They are all subordinate to Vishnu, they are deriving their power from Vishnu. So Narad Muni repeatedly says this in his writings. Vyasadeva repeatedly says this in his writings. So we understand that this is also Arjuna's understanding. So he's saying, all the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala and Vyas confirm this truth about you. So they all have the same understanding that I am having. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. And not only that, Arjuna is saying, you are also saying the same thing to me. So that means what? That means what Krishna is talking in the Bhagavad Gita is just standard Vaishnavism. It's just standard Vaishnavism. That's all. Listen to me. I am the one Supreme Being. All the other Vedic deities, Shiva, Brahma, Ganesh, Parvati, Kartikeya, they are all my servants. That is the point. That is the point. That is the understanding of Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyasa. That is the understanding of Arjuna. That is the understanding that Arjuna has got from hearing whatever he has heard. So if by my hearing Bhagavad Gita up till this point, I develop an understanding different from Arjuna, then my understanding is not in line with Arjuna. So one thing that we'll see, that Prabhupada in his commentary brings out, is he is simply amplifying these statements of Arjuna. It is entirely built upon Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. In other words, Bhagavad Gita as it is Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. It is an exegesis or an expansion of Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. This is Arjuna's understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Standard Vaishnavism. And Prabhupada writes, such understanding of Bhagavad Gita is really profitable and authorized for the welfare of human society in fulfilling the mission of life. And then he says, the Krishna consciousness movement is essential in human society, for it offers the highest perfection of life. How this is so is explained fully in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should know how God or Krishna is great, and everyone should know the factual position of the living entities. Everyone should know that the living entity is eternally a servant, and that unless one serves Krishna, one has to serve illusion in different varieties of the three modes of material nature, and thus wander perpetually within the cycle of birth and death. Even the so-called liberated Mayavadi speculator has to undergo this process. This knowledge constitutes a great science, when each and every living being has to hear it for his own interest. People in general, especially in this age of Kali, are enamored by the external energy of Krishna, and they wrongly think that by advancement of material comforts, every man will be happy. They have no knowledge that the material or external nature is very strong, for everyone is strongly bound by the stringent laws of material nature. A living entity is happily the part and parcel of the Lord, and thus his natural function is to render immediate service to the Lord. By the spell of illusion, one tries to be happy by serving his personal sense gratification in different forms, which will never make him happy. Instead of satisfying his own personal material senses, he has to satisfy the senses of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. The Lord wants this, and he demands it. One has to understand this central point of Bhagavad Gita. So this is the highest perfection of life, when we submit to Krishna's sense gratification. We submit to Krishna. We don't try to be like Krishna. Rather, we try to be unlike Krishna, and we submit to him. We become his bhogya, as Ramanujacharya says. We don't try to become bhokta, enjoyer. We become Krishna's bhogya. We become fit for Krishna's enjoyment. We qualify ourselves to be enjoyed by Krishna in a way that he wants. This is the highest perfection of life. But if we don't do this, then we can do other activities. The standard Vedic formula is
dharma leads to artha, which leads to kama. Dharma means activities, here we are talking of contextually, we are talking of material activities which are prescribed in the Vedas. For instance, give this charity, be truthful, and there are specific dharmas also. If you are a brahmachari, do this, don't do this. If you are a grihastha, do this, don't do this. If you are a sannyasi, do this, don't do this. When you do that, then the demigods provide actually resources for Vishnu. In the heart of the demigods, he inspires them, uses them to provide you artha, resources, appropriate resources. For every dharma, it has a particular corresponding artha. In using the artha, you enjoy your senses. Kama. So dharma leads to artha, which leads to kama. This is a mundane dharma, material dharma. Material dharma leads to material artha, which leads to material kama. Now, if you do not engage in Vedic dharma, and you engage in some mundane, some activity outside of the Vedic culture itself, simple activity, then that is called adharma. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also said that adharma leads to anartha. This is akama. Kama means sense satisfaction. Akama means sense dissatisfaction. Misery. Artha means material resource for enjoyment. Anartha means lack of material resource for enjoyment. Absence of material resource for enjoyment. Which naturally leads to sense dissatisfaction. So, dharma leads to anartha, which leads to akama. Dharma leads to artha, which leads to kama. However, this is temporary. This dharma is called, it's not called sanatana dharma. This is asanatana dharma. This is temporary dharma. Because it gives you, suppose, let us say, one performs a lot of pious activities of a certain type, then he has a good family. Suppose you do a certain type of pious activity, then in your next life you may be born in a very rich family, or you may have, let's say you have a very nice wife and you have nice children. But that nice wife and nice children are going to grow old or they'll die. So they're temporary. So that artha is temporary. So you can understand that this is temporary. And the happiness that you're getting out of them, the happiness that you're getting out of them is also temporary. It's going to go away. So therefore this dharma is also called temporary dharma. Or national dharma. Material dharma. Naimittika dharma, what you know. It is called naimittika artha. Temporary artha. Naimittika kama. It doesn't satisfy you on a on a permanent basis. Because the resolve goes away, your sense satisfaction or your satisfaction also goes away. But then, higher than this,
that is also
another thing. This is my extrapolation from these two. Parama dharma, parama artha, parama kama. You can extrapolate it from these two. That if you engage in permanent dharma, it is bhakti yoga. This parama dharma refers to supreme dharma, our highest duty, which is to engage in bhakti yoga. So when you engage in bhakti yoga, it leads to parama artha. It leads to resources which are temporary, which are permanent, which are non-temporary. We attain the spiritual world which is not destroyed, it is not perishable. And the happiness that you get is also supreme and permanent. It doesn't go away. Of course, the highest type of devotees don't even want their personal satisfaction with Krishna. They simply want to make Krishna happy. They simply want to make Krishna. That is also it. But we should keep this in mind, just to understand the overall picture. And repeatedly, we will see that Prabhupada brings out this point that when we serve Krishna, that makes us happy. It satisfies us. It actually satisfies us. That is why he is saying,
each and every living entity has to hear this great science for his own interest.
For his own interest. Because when you make Krishna happy, you also become happy. Just like when we become a servant of a millionaire, we also get to eat good food. Or like Prabhupada once he said, that when you become Krishna's servant, you don't have to bother about your personal satisfaction. Because Krishna is so great, automatically you get it. And he gave the example, he said that a man generally has to work hard and have a good livelihood, a good source of livelihood if he needs to get married. But he said that, but let us say that you have a millionaire like Birla and he has a daughter and the daughter wants to marry you. So now you are going to become Birla's son-in-law. You don't need to have a job. And if the girl herself wants to marry you and you are not hankering after her, she is hankering after you and her father likes her, and our father has a senior millionaire, you don't need a job. So Prabhupada gave that example. He said that if we simply engage in devotional service to Krishna, then you don't need to worry about yourself. And this is what Krishna is demanding. Right? He's saying here,
instead of satisfying his own personal material senses, he has to satisfy the senses of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. The Lord wants this, and he demands it. So Krishna wants this and Krishna is demanding it. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is demanding it. He is saying, sarva karman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Mamekam sharanam vraja. You do only this activity. Don't do bhakti yoga and anything else. Just do this. This is what he is demanding. This is the highest level of surrender that he is demanding. One has to understand the central point of Bhagavad Gita. Our Krishna consciousness movement is teaching the whole world the central point. And because we are not polluting the theme of Bhagavad Gita as it is, anyone seriously interested in deriving benefit by studying the Bhagavad Gita must take help from the Krishna consciousness movement for practical understanding of Bhagavad Gita under the direct guidance of the Lord. So if one wants to serve Krishna and come to the point of full surrender to Krishna, then we have to take help from those who are pure devotees, or at least aspiring pure devotees. We have to associate with such pure devotees or aspiring pure devotees, serve them, serve Krishna under them, and agree to be influenced by them. And then we will be certain, it will be certain that we will attain the highest perfection of life. We hope therefore that people will derive the greatest benefit by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, as we have presented it here. And if even one man becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, we shall consider our attempt a success. Many times Prabhupada made this point, despite all my work, one person becomes a pure devotee of Krishna. Pure devotee of Krishna means he is only interested in making Krishna happy, that's all. He doesn't himself want to be happy. He wants to make Krishna happy. He is willing to do whatever is required to make Krishna happy. That's a pure devotee. So if one man becomes a pure devotee, he said my whole attempt is success. This Guru Maharaj Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati also said the same thing. Despite all our great endeavor, if one person becomes a pure devotee, that's enough. Okay, any questions on what we've discussed so far?
Yes. Oh, you know, many times we talk about confidential knowledge or confidential, general meaning of confidential, secret.
It's a secret, yes.
Secret means hiding the secret, not tell it to anyone.
Correct.
While we intend to publicize this knowledge,
we intend to qualify people for this knowledge and then give it to them. We intend to qualify them for this and then give it to them. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavata Purana, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are presenting confidential Vedic information. Much of Vedic literature will not openly present out these things. So this is confidential. It is confidential. How many people get this point?
Yeah, people don't. So
the other thing is, it is also an open secret. It is also an open secret. Even if you put it out, it's not that just because you are publicizing something, people will be able to access it. It is not like that, because there are qualifications that are required. Qualifications are required. If you don't have those qualifications, your knowledge is just theoretical. Just like, for instance, some cinema has come out, new movie has come out. It's a great movie, thousands of people are watching it. And someone puts a notice that you can download this movie from here. Okay. But if you go to that website, you don't know how to download it. But it has certain features that any hacker will understand. And he will know how to download it from there. You don't know how to download it, but he knows how to download it. So it is an open secret. So he's putting it, correctly has put it. It's downloadable from here. But you need to know how to get it from there. That much you need to know. If you don't know how to do that, you won't know how to do that. If you don't know certain basic principles of web technology, you will not be able to download it. So that's called an open secret. Here also, Krishna is saying all these things. He's saying, Manmana, Bhava, Manbhakto, Matyajivana, Vaskuri. He's putting it out, spelling it out. But because you are not doing what is further required in order to take full benefit of that, it still remains a secret. It is an open secret. Okay, we have some time. So we'll go through these verses of Mangalachar. We'll go through the first three verses of Mangalachar. Om Ajnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This is a very common recited verse. Even non-Vaishnavas are aware of this in India. This is the fundamental difference between Western civilization and Vedic civilization. In Vedic civilization, in Western civilization, they think that people are all intrinsically good and enlightened. Intrinsically they are good and enlightened. Intrinsically they are good. So therefore, many times people will come and say, don't try to follow this or that, just be yourself. Just be yourself. And the idea is, yourself is good. Yourself is not evil or bad. Yourself is good. You're good. So just be yourself. Because whatever thoughts that your mind generates, they are all intrinsically good. Whereas in Vedic civilization, the idea is, in the conditioned sphere, everyone is, all the thoughts that one generates, thoughts, desires and all that one generates, is intrinsically evil. It's intrinsically dark. I was born in the darkest ignorance. Ajnana timirandrasya. Jnananjana shalakaya. But my spiritual master came to me and he is revealing to me what is good for me. So the idea is that, don't be yourself. Listen to your guru. Don't be yourself. Don't listen to my heart is saying. No, your heart is all good. It's all kalushita, it's contaminated, adulterated, nonsense. It is stool only. Don't ever, in Vedic civilization, you'll never hear this kind of advice. Be yourself. Listen to your heart. Does your heart say that? There's nothing like that. Because your heart is nonsense. Because you're born in the darkness of ignorance. You're not born in the sunshine of knowledge. It's all nonsense. So that is how in Vedic civilization the entire concept is fundamentally, foundationally different. Foundationally different. We begin with this point. That anything that's produced from your material mind, material heart is all nonsense. It is dark. Darkness means misery. That's what darkness signifies. When there's no electricity and you don't have a torch and you have to go from one place to another and it happens to be Amavasya, then when you're walking and you don't know the pathway, you're put in some unknown place, you're going to keep hitting here and there. Ignorance naturally leads to misery. So when he's saying, when the mantra says, it's actually a mantra, I was born in the darkest ignorance. It means I am miserable being born in the darkest ignorance. And my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. He opened my eyes to brilliant spiritual reality. And the very fact that you are saying, my spiritual master opened my eyes, it means that I am unable to open my eyes. That's why he opened my eyes. I am unable to open my eyes. This is another thing. In Western civilization, they really think that you can do it. You can do it. You don't need a guru. A guru is just a temporary help. And you find that even our devotees who are affected by the Western civilization, they have all these concepts. Even if you have a guru, consult him as less as possible. Because you are intrinsically good. You are intrinsically capable. You are intelligent. You are capable. You can do it yourself. Be yourself. Stand on your own feet. Whereas in Vedic civilization, no. Never stand on your own feet. Your feet is nonsense. Your heart is nonsense. You are nonsense. Being a conditioned soul, you are averse to Krishna. Everything that comes out of you is nonsense. So listen to someone who is not a nonsense. So it is fundamentally a different concept. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge and therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto him. The second shloka is expressing one's allegiance to Rupa Goswami, who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prime disciple. To such an extent that we don't even call ourselves followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Anugas. We call ourselves followers of Rupa Goswami, Rupa Anugas. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swaparantikam. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? Rupa Goswami was commissioned by Lord Chaitanya to succeed, to take over his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu engaged in his pastimes in Navadvip Mandal first year. Then he resided in Kshetra Mandal in Jagannath Puri. But he commissioned Rupa and Sanatan, his prime chief disciples, send them to Vrindavan, gave them certain instructions. You excavate Vrindavan. There are many holy places connected to Krishna's pastimes which are lost. You do scriptural research and you excavate these places. You publish books on Krishna consciousness and so on. He gave instructions how to preach Krishna consciousness.
So the task of strategizing how to spread Krishna consciousness fell on Rupa Sanatana, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And later it was taken over by Jiva Goswami. Then it came down through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Narottam Shyamananda Srinivas. Then it came down to Vishwanath Chakravarti, then Baladev Vidyabhushan. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the main personality who took it up again. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also took up the work. And then Prabhupada took up the work. So Rupa Goswami is the first person who actually formalized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to do, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. It was systematized under Rupa Goswami's direction and supervision. So therefore, the prayer runs as, when will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? Vande ham Shri Guru, Shri Yutapada Kamalam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsirivam, Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishnapadam Sahagana Laita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam. I offer my respects to my Guru's lotus feet. And then he says, Shri Gurun, I also offer my obeisances to my Gurus in the disciplic line. That means the Guru's Guru and so on. So we offer obeisance to our Guru, and then his Guru, and then his Guru, and then his Guru. Goes all the way to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vaishnavamscha. We offer our obeisances to the Vaishnavas also. Shri Rupam, to Rupa Goswami. Sagrajatam, to his elder brother, Sanatana Goswami. Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsa Jeevam, to the others, Raghunath Das, Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta, and Jiva Goswami. So these are the six Goswamis. This is a shloka by Krishnadas Kaviraj. This appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sadvaitam, Savadhutam, I offer my obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu along with Advaita, Nityananda, as well as Garadhar, Srivas and other associates. Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padan, I offer my obeisances to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, as well as Lalita, Vishakha and their maids and so on, and their maids and so on. So this is the system by which we offer obeisances to Radha Krishna. That's the process, as you can see. Again, as I said, these are all systematized. Kaviraj Goswami was a disciple of, was a follower of Jiva Goswami. He had met Rupa Goswami, but he is a follower of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was a direct nephew and disciple of Rupa Goswami. So the training was given like that. The second verse, Sri Chaitanya Manu Vishtam, this is Narottam Das Thakur's composition. Narottam Das Thakur. The first one appears in Gautamiya Tantra, if I remember correctly. Okay, I'll stop now. Any questions? Otherwise, we'll continue tomorrow. It's already 11 o'clock. Yes.
When some under the preface, Prabhupada has written his name, A.P. Giridhar Swami.
Yeah.
So I just want to understand the system of writing the names and what each word means. Like Swami means sannyasi, right?
Yeah, when Prabhupada was given sannyas, he was given the
title Swami.
You get a title Swami.
So only sannyasi are Swami, not
Prabhupada. There are various titles.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada was given the title Swami.
And Bhaktivedanta is like educational qualification.
That was an honorary title. You see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would often give honorary titles to disciples, and these would come as suffixes to their names. His own initiated name is Abhay Charanaranda, A.C. So when
Prabhupada was given an honorary title by his godbrothers as Bhaktivedanta. Then his name became Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta.
Now you say godbrothers means what? The teacher, spiritual master or?
No. The Prabhupada's senior godbrothers. Prabhupada's senior godbrother. Godbrother means a co-disciple. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. When he took sannyas, his name became Bhaktivedanta Swami.
Title became the name.
That is the, when they initiate you into sannyas, the sannyas guru, sannyas initiator, he chooses the name and he chooses the title. So he chose the name Bhaktivedanta itself as his name.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami.
Prabhupada is the name.
The title. It's an honorary title given by disciples.
We call him by title.
Ah, we call him. In India, we refer to great spiritual personalities by their titles. They may have their names, but we call them by their titles. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's actually a title.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The entire thing is a title.
Bhaktivinoda itself is a title.
Bhaktivinoda is a title, and Thakur is the name.
That's another title. His name was initiated, was born as Kedarnath Dutta, and when he was initiated, he was given the name Satchidananda. Satchidananda. But his guru gave him the title, Bhaktivinoda. So from that time onwards, Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda was used, sometimes Bhaktivinoda itself was used.
So in Sydney, once I read a leaflet saying Prabhupada is coming to Sydney.
Yes.
And I started wondering, what is this about? And then I realized that it was a title given to someone else who was coming to the end. Just a few years ago.
Okay, let's stop with this.